at the heart of North Yorkshire.
In the Hot Seat with Jonathan Cowap.
BBC Radio York.
Good morning then, final hour of the programme, and devoted to chatting to James Alexander, who's opposite me now. Good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to see you. The beard, I'll give you my verdict as another beard wearer towards the end of the programme this morning. Okay, you invited a question then about East Coast Main Line.
Yes.
You had a meeting, I understand, with East Coast Main Line yesterday. What was that about?
We've set up a group of councils for all the way from East Lothian and Edinburgh all the way down to Stevenage that are actually lobbying the government on the East Coast Main Line. We want to see extra investment. Rail experts say £260 million is required to bring it up to speed. There's a huge disparity in terms of train journey times to London. I mean, there can be half an hour difference going from York to London, and we really want to make sure that it works properly.
We do really well in this part of the country, though. I mean, some friends of mine came up from London a couple of months, well, actually last year, come think of it now, and they were astonished about how quickly they could get here.
The East Coast service is brilliant. I mean, there's no way around that, and you know, when you tell people in London it's less than 2 hours, they're amazed by it.
So what are you campaigning about?
But the campaign is why is it not less than 2 hours every time? Why is it that there's trains 17 minutes late on a regular basis, and yet that's still considered to be on time? You know, we want there to be a regular service, and that's what people expect.
Is this York fighting back because York is not going to be on the HS2 network? Is that, it's going to be half an hour away in Leeds?
Well, we're still lobbying around that. We have been working through the Leeds City region to be able to actually say that we think that the connection up to the East Coast Main Line via Leeds should come via York. We have spoken to ministers and so on about that, and we're hoping that they listen.
Is that going to get any credence at all? I mean, Leeds does seem to be the favoured place. The idea that you would spend, I don't know how many extra million or billion pounds also trying to bring a spur of that line to York is a bit of a pipe dream, isn't it?
Well, it depends whether people think that York can contribute to the economy of the country, and whether access up to Scotland via York is important. And I think it is. And I think people in York think it is. And I think slowly we're beginning to convince ministers that it is as well.
Right. James Alexander, leader of the City of York Council, our guest on the programme this morning for the next 45 minutes or so. So not that long to get your question to him. If you've got an issue, whether it be a broad issue like that, something like East Coast Main Line, and whether or not it will ever make it, whether the high speed line will ever make it to York, and what needs to be done about the East Coast Main Line, or whether it's something closer to home, something in your neighbourhood, James is here to answer your questions. Jules Bellaby is also out and about this morning, giving you the chance to walk straight up to him in Acom. Good morning, Jules.
Good morning, yes, bringing you the direct access to the leader of the council here in York. So no excuses not to get involved this morning. You don't even have to leave the environments if you live in Acom, because I'm here on Front Street, parked outside the Halifax. In fact, there's only two vehicles down Front Street at the moment, me and the Fishman, so you can't mistake us. If you go to the Fishman by mistake, he'll soon put you right, and I'm afraid if you come to me asking for fish, I can't even give you the price of it. But I can give you direct access to James Alexander, leader of the City of York Council. All you have to do is come up, make yourself known, ask your question, and Bob's your uncle, you're on.
Jules, thank you very much indeed. Yes, so go and ask him how much is some coley for the cat. One thing I do want to ask you about, James, before we go any further, and it's a story that's really shocked the city over the last, 48, 72 hours. Yesterday we heard news of this 10-year-old, this little lad, Gabriel Wishart, who was set on fire in Ashton Park, in the Clifton area of York. Now, I can imagine you'd be as horrified and as just amazed that could happen in your city. But here you are, you're the leader of the City Council. What do you think's going wrong in the City of York that we have citizens, albeit young citizens, who are capable of doing something so stupid?
Well, it is shocking, and you know, my thoughts are with the family and obviously the young kid. I was in a meeting yesterday with the police commissioner for York and North Yorkshire, talking about how the council can work more closely together with the police to be able to deal with antisocial behaviour. But one of the important things to recognise is York is a very, very safe place. You know, when you compare it to anywhere else in the region, anywhere else in the country for that matter, this is a very, very isolated incident.
Which makes it all the more scary. Which makes it all the more shocking.
It does. It makes it all the more shocking because it's just not expected at all. It's not expected anywhere in the country, but especially in a city like York that is safe. But I don't know the individual details of that case, and exactly why and what happened. But I just hope that the young boy recovers very, very quickly. Exactly.
And so say all of us. But I just come back to my question. What is going on with this younger element of the citizens of York, do you think, that some of them can be so far off message that they can think that that is appropriate or funny or daring or whatever was going through their minds? What do you think is going wrong about their understanding of their citizenship of York that they think that is an appropriate thing to do?
Well, I don't think we should categorise it just as young people. I mean, clearly there was young people involved in this incident, but there's equally, you know, very shocking things that happen with much older people. I don't think this is because young people there is a problem. I think there is a problem with some people, and therefore we need to make sure we have a correct police response and all the rest of it.
You talk about the police response. I mean, that is dealing with it as it happens or after the fact. What about the message that this city doesn't want behaviour like that? So it's about good citizenship. It's about a feeling of pride and a feeling of, I don't want that kind of thing to happen here. What can you and the city council do to instil that?
Well, when you go around any of our schools, you realise that a lot of that is instilled anyway. I mean, we have some excellent, excellent young people doing some very, very good work that people never see. I mean, the amount of volunteering that young people do, the amount they do to help their elders. I mean, Joseph Rowntree School, for example, are doing a huge amount in terms of trying to be a part of their community and being able to help elderly people in terms of transferring energy and all the rest of it. However, as I say, I don't think this is an isolated incident for just young people. You know, this is an isolated incident in its whole, but you know, there is some difficulty sometimes with people of no matter what age.
OK, thanks for your thoughts on that. Don't assume that just because you live outside the City of York and because James Alexander is leader of the City of York Council, you can't put a question to him if you don't actually happen to be within the city boundaries. You probably visit York, rely on York, shop in York. So you've got just as much right to ask him a question about the way, I don't know, parking policy is governed in the city as anybody else. So don't hold back if you want to do that. The number is 01904 641 641. It wouldn't be long before we get to talk about money.
Sure.
And you, if I've got my figures right, you need to save £9 million in the current financial year into 2014, and then you're expected to save £12 million the year after that.
We were expecting to save £12 million. It looks like it's going to be nearer £11 now. However, it's still incredibly difficult. I mean, to put it into context, York has had to find savings up to 14-15 of 30% of its budget from government, and that is huge.
And what specifically has got to go? What are you going to cut in order to make those savings?
Well, what we've been trying to do is make sure that we deliver the right services and deliver services in a different way. We did a big survey of residents that actually said they expect us to look at different service delivery models. They expect us to try and achieve delivery for a cheaper cost. However, there is only so far you can go. I mean, 40% of our management costs have been taken out. Our back office function has gone from £17 million down to £13 million. Now, clearly, when you're trying to save £11 million in a year, you can't do that through efficiency savings alone. So, sadly, some services will have to stop, and some services we will have to either charge for or they will have to go completely.
And which ones are they?
Well, we've already said about garden waste collections that we may have to charge on that. We are consulting on it. You will have seen that we're not unique in that. Selby charging, I think, £26 a year. I think
They're talking about it.
Sheffield is about £54 a year, I think.
How much will York charge?
Well, we're not sure at the moment. I mean, we're trying to find other ways of getting around it. I mean, we might have to have a situation whereby, you know, your first bin is free, but then we charge beyond that. We're not sure, but we are consulting on it to find out what we can do. But there is an assumed saving from that area.
Garden bins is one thing, but, I mean, when you're talking these astronomical figures of 9 million and 11 million, you now say, charging for garden waste collection is not going to settle that.
It's not going to scratch the surface. I mean, there's a whole raft of savings that will be announced on the 4th of January, but we are reaching the bone so much that actually it's easier to talk about what we've managed to protect rather than what's actually going. I mean, we were discussing very recently, do we have to get rid of all of our school crossing patrols? I mean, that's the situation that we're finding ourselves in. We said no, so we had to find different savings. We've had to look at, what do we do around our libraries? And we've said that we would try and move it towards a social enterprise to be able to run it at a cheaper cost. But, you know, this is a big struggle.
Would it be better, I know it's a tough thing to say and it sounds cruel, rather than salami slicing, as the expression goes, you know,
I think that's gone, trimming a bit there. I don't think we're salami slicing, right. We're not even in that realm.
It's whole scale.
Are we going to do this or not?
And if
we're going to do it, can we do it in a different way?
And come on, what's on that list then?
I've already said libraries is one of them. We've mentioned before about leisure services.
You're keeping the libraries.
Well, we are. We're trying to do our best to be able to keep them. But if this social enterprise doesn't work, then we'll have to shut them down. I mean, that's the situation that we're in.
So if people don't come forward and agree to help you run the libraries...
Partly. I mean, a lot of our service, it's going to be use it or lose it. I mean, I just want to be upfront about that, because we can't afford to provide services that people don't use.
What else is on that list?
Everything has been on the list for consideration. We looked at care criteria. Do we have to go to critical? We don't think we have to at the moment.
Sorry, what does that, I don't understand what that means.
It means when you assess someone for the care services that they require, we already said last year that we're going to have to go to substantial rather than moderate, because more people need that service. By 2015, half of the council's expenditure will be on elderly care. And a lot of people are surprised by that. And so we've said we can't continue to have a non-targeted approach. We have to target it at the most needy. So therefore, we've gone to substantial. We consider this year, do we have to go to critical? You know, literally, you know, almost dying before you receive those services. And we said that can't be right. And therefore, things like the garden waste charges come back on the table.
OK, well, sure, we'll return to this
before
we're done. I'll repeat again, if you've got a question for James Alexander, he's here to take your questions, wants your feedback, maybe even wants your suggestions and ideas about how money could be saved, because it sounds like the council have been through just about every option. But there are other issues around, and Derek is on the line from Clifton. Good morning, Derek.
Hello, Jonathan.
What's the point that you want to make to James Alexander this morning?
Well, I'm sure that most politicians get frequent criticism, and indeed, I'm sure he's more than aware of the concerns that often people in the street will tell me about. It's a closed-door policy in the council. And in fact, I was pleased that on May the 4th, he responded to the opposition by saying that his moves would reduce bureaucracy and that the big decisions would continue to be made in public. I live in Rawcliffe, and clearly one of the big decisions is the council working with Goldtrees Festival, 7,000 people, bank holiday weekend, camping, music till sort of 12 at night, buses till 2:30, and so far nobody in Rawcliffe has any idea. But if you wanted to buy a ticket in November, probably 3,000 or 4,000 people already know that it's likely to be either in Rawcliffe or Hubie. So why is it that he, with his great intention, I think, of making the big decision public, has not done so through his ward councillors or any other medium?
James.
Because there's no decision been taken. I mean, I understand that the organiser of the festival has recently been to the parish council. There has been some concerns. I've received a letter back, which I've passed on to officers to actually have some discussions about. There are some concerns about it, but what we would like to do is hold more events in our parks and our open spaces to be able to generate income and actually bring more people into the city. Now, clearly, we have to work with the local community around some of those concerns, but any decision that would be taken around this festival would be taken openly and in public.
Derek, that is going to happen then. You will get your say. It's not a foregone conclusion.
It also needs to go through licensing. And licensing is an open meeting and people can register to speak, because if they do need an alcohol licence, they're going to have to apply for it.
Derek, it's still all there to argue for. Nothing's been decided.
Oh, well, far from it. I mean, those who read Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy would wonder perhaps if James Alexander is a secret Vogon. He knows, as I do, that a small notice may go up towards the end of this month on the entrance to that little bit of grass called the country park, and at that point there will be a month for possible objections on certain limited and right legal objections. But he also knows full well that the public in this part of Rawcliffe, his residents, those people that his councillors are meant to support, his ward councillors, are not even aware that this is going on. How can he possibly say that the big decisions would continue to be made public when I spoke to two ward councillors, one of his, Neil McIlveen, and to Joe Watts. Joe Watts had no knowledge whatsoever, whereas Neil McIlveen knew about this on the 7th of January.
Seems a fair point, James. If your own councillors are not even aware that something as massive as a festival that could attract 7,000 people is going to perhaps suddenly appear on the outskirts of York, it does seem odd that the councillors are not even aware. And quite clearly, you know, you talk about the need to attract people in and the need to create money for the city, but also you don't want to alienate the, 3,500, 4,000 people who live in the Rawcliffe area by putting a festival that's going to go on, I think Derek said, till 2 o'clock in the morning on their doorstep.
Well, no decision's been taken whatsoever. You know, if Derek already knows that this has been discussed, then clearly he will know when the decision is going to be taken. He can be involved. He can make representations. That's the way democracy works. There's no decision been taken that this is happening. It may happen. It may not. It may happen at different times. They may get an alcohol license. They may not. You know, this hasn't gone through those processes, and our councillors will be involved in that. That's why the organisers went to the parish council at the first opportunity they had to actually discuss this with them.
Derek, quick final comment.
It's not my understanding that he's spoken to Rawcliffe Parish Council. In fact, he's invited to a meeting on February 11th, I believe.
My understanding is that he's gone. I actually have an email and I've had a letter from Rawcliffe Parish Council expressing some concerns.
Yes, certainly some concerns, but he has not been to the council. Phone up the clerk or ask the chair. You'll discover that he has not attended a parish council meeting.
Gentlemen, we're going to have to leave it there for the moment and move on, but doubtless this is one we're going to come back to on future occasions. I'm absolutely certain of that. Let's go to Thomas, who is also on the line this morning. Different concern, Thomas. What is it you want to raise with James?
My problem is that before Christmas, our dustbin was taken away by the dustbin men. It was beginning to look a bit tatty and the wheels were beginning to fall off. I don't know when a new one is coming, but a friend of mine waited for over 8 weeks for the new dustbin to be delivered, and I just wondered why it takes so long.
You're completely right. There has been a backlog of those replacement bins. Actually, a couple of months ago, there was an issue where some people actually wanted to go and collect their replacement bins and were told due to health and safety they weren't allowed to. And I've said to our officers, that's ridiculous. You know, we need to be in a situation, if people just want to go and get it themselves, then let them. It actually saves money to the council taxpayer. But if you want to contact me direct, I'll get it sorted for you.
Thomas, it can be done.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you very much. Nice. It's difficult, isn't it? I mean, here we've got sort of people with, like Thomas there in Poppleton, with very regular, sensible, day-to-day concerns about doing something like disposing of the household waste, set against this enormous background of these huge cutbacks you've got to make. And as you said a few minutes ago, talking about, you know, people having to restrict care to those who are regarded as critically in need of it.
I know. I mean, that's one of my frustrations, I suppose, is, you know, I'm trying to be a leader of a city at a time of austerity, and it is difficult. And it's difficult for all council leaders around the country, and every council is also different in terms of its financial position. But, you know, what we're talking about is, do we want this city to grow and economically prosper, or do we want to be in decline and simply cut back to core services? Now, I believe if you do the latter, this city will fail and fold. And I'm not exaggerating by saying some councils in the next 3 years will go bankrupt. York will not be one of those, because 60% of our income comes from council tax, but some councils not a million miles away from us will go bankrupt.
And your job to stop that happening?
It's to stop that happening, but more importantly than that, it's to make sure that our people can be able to have access to jobs. And if they have access to jobs, they can become self-sustainable. The education attainment goes up with their children, their health goes up, alcohol consumption goes down, crime goes down. It is all linked to the economy, and therefore my job is to bring jobs to York.
Right, that's a big-scale thing and a very important thing. Let's just stay with the subject of getting rid of waste for a moment or two's time. Dougie is on the line from Huntington. Morning, Dougie.
Good morning to you. Good morning, Jonathan.
And what's your issue for James?
Yes, hi. Good morning, James.
Good morning.
Just a question is that I'm not quite sure why the council is imposing or suggesting imposing this additional levy on green waste of about £26 in a couple of years' time. I mean, going back a few years, I've lived in Huntington for 23 years now. On my garden, waste used to be part of my black bin, my black rubbish bin, which I put mixed in. And then this council sensibly split our waste with black bins and green bins, which, again, my council tax was paying for that at the time and still is paying for that at the moment. I can't understand because why you're starting to introduce an additional levy, which is really an additional council tax charge on my what I already pay.
James?
It was sensible to be able to make that split because clearly some of that garden waste was going into landfill and landfill taxes are increasing. The reason why we're looking at a charge is it comes as a surprise to quite a few people. But actually, your council tax does not cover the cost of the services you receive. It covers 60% of what you receive. 40% comes from the government additionally, and that is being cut by 30%. So the choice is, Should we introduce some form of charge for the residents that do have garden waste collections, because not all do, and clearly some people can compost as well. I know not everybody can. Or do we look at restricting care services? I mean, that's the kind of choices we are looking at, and I just need to be blunt about it.
Dougie, that puts it very crudely. Well, not crudely, but, I mean, that is the horns of the dilemma. It's care of people who really need it versus somebody maybe like yourself having to pay a bit extra across the year to have the green waste collected.
But we all encourage to have nice gardens, look after the birds and God knows what else, what we have been asked to do, and people are doing it. And a lot of people enjoy the gardens. Why should they be penalised for actually putting the green waste in? Because what's going to happen here is that, for instance, my black bin now is only ever filled half full, even over the 2-week cycle. So therefore, all I need to do is to put my garden rubbish into a black bin, put it in my black wheelie bin, and it's going against what we should be doing.
Yeah, well, Dougie makes a fair point, and that's why we're out to consultation at the moment. We don't want it just to go into the standard black bins and the grey bins and so on. But at the same time, you know, I have residents in my wards that will be saying, hold on a minute, I don't have a garden. And yet, somehow, the money that I'm paying in tax is subsidising people who do, and yet now you're telling me I can't have as much care services for my mother or whatever.
It's very hard. We all pay for things, though, that we don't use, don't we?
We all do. I mean, I get letters from people saying, well, I don't want my money going towards schools because I don't have any kids and so on. But, you know, we're a society. We are a community, and therefore we have to be able to have those services running for all of our community and to all of our benefit.
Can we talk about something? Sorry, I was going to stop you there.
Talk
about something very big. Yeah. That we learned is going to happen, the Tour de France. We know
huge.
The figures for how much other councils are paying to bring the event to Yorkshire. Leeds, hosting Le Grand Depart in July of 2014, they've paid a £4 million staging fee to do so. Other councils around Yorkshire, Sheffield, York, Harrogate, they've pledged to meet, I think, nearly £2.5 million of that cost. In addition, running the event is expected to cost councils a further £2.5 million. Straightforward question. How much has the City of York Council had to contribute in getting the Tour de France to Yorkshire?
Well, there's two figures. The first was the actual bid to secure it. And a lot of people criticised and said, you'll never get the Tour de France. And we put £50,000 in towards the bid. The second figure will be around the £500,000 mark. We're still in negotiations around it, so I hope I haven't blown our negotiation position. However, there is a cost to the organisers to be able to host it. But this is huge for York. I mean, the viewing figures of the Tour de France is 3.5 billion. I mean, I had no idea at the beginning of this process and this campaign that half the world watched the Tour de France, and we hope that half will be watching on day two when it starts in York.
I'm certain they will, and I'm sure it's going to act as a big advert for the city. Is that money well spent? Because it does seem that you're having to speculate, really, with that money. You know, £500,000 and a smaller amount, £50,000, at a time when we're talking about critical services to people. It's very difficult to say we need to speculate with that very valuable £500,000 in the hopes that it does the economy and the image of the city some good and maybe returns that fivefold or tenfold.
But that comes back to what I said before. You know, you have to be ambitious and you have to run this as a business and you have to go out there and go for growth, because what we want is our businesses to prosper, to employ more York people, for the business rates to come back into the city, and actually that can then be put towards critical services that are important. If we just go for decline and we said no to the Tour de France, we're not going to put the bid in and so on, it would go around us and everyone would say, what a missed opportunity, all of us have been left out and we wouldn't have the hotel stays and all the rest of it.
So it's difficult, though. You sort of imagine sitting opposite the son or daughter, the relative, say, of some elderly person who is in desperate need of some care, but the city can no longer afford to give that care, or maybe it's had to be whittled back to the bare minimum, or maybe they're having to pay a lot more for it. Meanwhile, you know, we're handing over money to the organisers of the Tour de France so 160 blokes can go whizzing through the city on bikes.
Yeah, but look at how much it's beneficial to the economy. I mean, the figure that has been brought up from when London had a hosting, it's £90 million.
But will that benefit to the economy trickle back in such a way that actually you can say to that desperate relative, now the Tour de France will make money so that actually your elderly mum or dad can get better care?
Yes, what the government has done, and it's something I do agree with, although the scales are not the same, is they're trying to incentivise councils to facilitate economic growth by allowing us to keep proportions of new business rates. In future, and I think it's from the 1st of April, we will keep 20 95 pence out of every pound of new business rates generated. If this economy grows, this city gets more money, and that can go into services. Now, I think that's a good thing. I think if we don't go for that, then we're simply looking at further and further cuts, going into decline, and this city will fail.